Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, International Women's Day isn't too far away, and for this year, a lot of the discussion will focus on how the pandemic has affected women. In particular, in January, the European Parliament approved a report that looked at this issue, and we're joined on News Talk by the author of that report, MEP Frances Fitzgerald. Good afternoon, Frances.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Would it be fair to say that during the pandemic that women's rights have gone backwards?
There's a real danger that that will happen for a whole lot of reasons. The impact of the pandemic is differential on women and men, and we have a lot of statistics, even at this stage, Sean, to prove that. I've done a report in the European Parliament on it that shows the differential impact. You know, at one area, for example, domestic violence has been horrendous, about a 30% increase across Europe. Women's jobs tend to be more precarious. So again, COVID will have impacted on those services sectors. And then if you look at the whole care area, we've had this enormous, if you like, care responsibility that is often carried by women, not exclusively, but often. And that has been very much to the fore. And the statistics of women who do the caring across Europe, the percentages are extraordinary. They're all over 80 and 90%. And even cashiers in supermarkets, which you mightn't think about, 82% are women.
I know. And on that point of the differential, I was interested to see in the report that men are dying at a higher rate from COVID.
Well, they are. The statistics we have so far are that older men are dying at a higher rate. Now, we don't know particularly the reason for this, the differential impact again. Now, we do know that overall that young boys, for example, from a health, from a psychological point of view, are more vulnerable than young girls. But and we also know that men tend to die earlier. So whether there's a general, if you like, kind of health correlation when it comes to COVID as well. But one of the points I make is that when you're looking at a pandemic like this, we really do have to get the research and the data about the differential impact. So we absolutely need to do research to see why the impact on men is so serious. Mm. And then you look at the socioeconomic side and the violence issues, and they are certainly, and the care issues. And I suppose combining work and family life, all of the statistics that I've been looking at show that it's tougher for women, you know, working from home without childcare. They get more stressed, more anxious. They're carrying more of a burden. The data is telling us that at this stage. And it's not too surprising.
Yeah. But I suppose, could one say that the circumstances created by COVID and the lockdown just exacerbated what was there already?
I think that's exactly it. You know, we went into the pandemic in an unequal situation. Now, great progress in Ireland, and we all know that. But we know there are outstanding issues, whether it comes to, you know, trying to combine work and family life. I found it very interesting, for example, that childcare wasn't necessarily considered essential during the pandemic here. Mm. And, you know, working from home is not a substitute for childcare, as a lot of young couples listening to your programme will tell you, or young parents, you know, it's incredible. Difficult. And so it has, you're right, it's exaggerated the inequalities that were there. So a statistic I came across, which I found kind of extraordinary, is that because of the pandemic and the lack of education and outreach programs, for example, you'll have 2 million more young girls and women who will suffer female genital mutilation. You'll have 13 million more children in early marriages over the next decade. And again, because of the cutbacks in essential services. And I suppose from an Irish perspective, that sounds like an extreme example, but it's true. And then you come nearer home and you see the challenges in relation to who does the caring. And there's so much unpaid care. And one of the things I'm saying is that across Europe, and working as an MEP, I'm saying we need to have a care strategy, a European care strategy, because it's one thing to go out and clap, but to actually reward workers in the care area with proper wages. And we still have a gender pay gap, although we've new legislation coming out from the European Commission today on that, which is very welcome.
So to get down to the brass tacks, I suppose, of what you're proposing and how much it will cost, you know, we all want everyone to, certainly frontline workers, people working at cash registers to be better paid than they are. How does one go about bringing that to reality?
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to look at the enormous sums of money that are being put in, over $1 trillion, by the European Union into member states. And Ireland, for example, has to do a national recovery plan, and the plans have to go in to Europe by April. Now, in every member state, we have to be sure that that takes account of the kind of issues I'm talking about. So that when you're talking about, you know, building back jobs, for example, we might think naturally of construction, but we need to be thinking about the kind of training in IT to deal with the digital gap that's there at the moment as far as women are concerned. We need to be building in the kind of supports and courses, the childcare, that will enable women and men, of course, you know, to combine work and family life and make sure this work-life directive we have. We know to date that even when men have paternity leave, they tend not to take it, even though they're entitled to it. And this happens from, you know, Sweden to Ireland, right across Europe. So, I mean, the main thing is to say that if we don't take account of these things, Sean, the loss to the GDP of Ireland and of Europe will be enormous. We've a loss of 353 billion estimated across Europe if we don't make sure that we give women the opportunity to be economically empowered and get into the workforce. We have statistics that are saying female entrepreneurs, you know, have really are reducing in number and are finding the pandemic more difficult. We need to do the kind of mentoring programs that Enterprise Ireland was doing before. You know, there's a whole lot of specifics we can do. And really the cost, we have to think about the cost of not doing it, because increasingly we're seeing that if you give both women and men opportunities, your GDP increases hugely. So the cost of not doing it is greater than the cost of, you know, just leaving things as they are.
And now on the subject of the work-life balance directive, one assumes that when all this is over, there will be a proportion of the workforce who go, I was working at home, notwithstanding childcare and all the difficulties layered on top of that, but I was working from home and I'd prefer to keep doing that. So what is the work-life balance directive and does it help in that regard?
Yes, I think what it's saying really is that it's up to member states and employers to ensure that choice is available to people. And I think we've gone a decade ahead in relation to this. Who'd have thought we would be able to work from home the way that we have? I mean, that is something that suits not everybody, but, you know, many will choose that, and it will make it easier to combine work and family life. Others, of course, Sean, say that it doesn't, that it's actually more pressurised and that they prefer to have their routine of going out to work. So it is about making sure that we have, you know, the paternity leave, the parental leave and so on. And Ireland is pretty much, you know, it's doing well on those grounds as well. I mean, when you look at equality issues across Europe, you actually see that Ireland, and there is much unfinished business. We do have an unfinished democracy with only 22% of women in the Dáil. We certainly have an unfinished democracy. But, you know, we are doing well in many areas. But that other area then of women's voices, whether it's in the media, whether it's women in science or, you know, generally in decision making in companies, we still have incredibly low percentages. So I think, you know, the work-life balance is what it says it is. It's about what are the kind of conditions that will help people achieve the kind of work-life balance that they want. And I think there are cultural issues here. And childcare, of course, is central. We still haven't the level. We've improved, but we still haven't the level of childcare supports that really, you know, gives men and women the kind of flexibility that supports the choices that they make. So that's a very important area for us going forward.
And also this issue of paying people properly who work in creches and childcare centres too, I would have thought. Within the EU, though, there are issues about women's rights in certain member states, very problematic situations that were there before COVID and will still be there. How does the EU go about changing that?
Well, you know, this is a huge issue. I've been really shocked at what I've seen in a number of member states. For example, there's a convention called the Istanbul Convention, which Ireland has signed up to. And we still have about four or five member states who won't sign up to it because they think it's an excuse, a kind of a Trojan horse for LGBTQI rights. Extraordinary. But that's the attitude. We have in Poland LGBTQI free zones, for example. You have people, you've about three or four member states at the meeting where the prime ministers meet, where they don't want the words gender equality used because they think it's a false kind of construct and that, you know, we shouldn't be talking about it. And they've actually stopped the Council of Prime Ministers making statements about gender equality. So it is interesting when you compare what's happening in Ireland and then you see that, you know, there is an attempt to roll back rights very often from authoritarian leaders. And we have a lot of authoritarian leaders around the world at the moment who really disrespect women and women's rights. And I think we have to stand up to them. And for the European Union, your question is, you know, what can we do? We're constantly discussing this in the Parliament. Yesterday, just in the group I'm involved in myself, the Orban's party in Hungary left it because we brought in stricter rules, you know, about how we could let parties, you know, suspend parties and deprive parties of their part in our party. So it's a very problematic issue because the question you're asking really is about values. It's like, you know, press freedom and, you know, respecting individuals and human dignity. And when countries, you know, at a very authoritarian level go against that, I mean, increasingly now we're saying that they should lose some money. You know, to quote, you know, President Joe Biden, you know what he says, don't tell me what you value, show me your budget and I'll tell you what you value. So maybe we are starting to bring in strict rules about the money that's given out across Europe. And I think that's the direction that the European Union and the Parliament certainly will go in the future when there are these sorts of transgressions.
It's a tricky one, though, I would imagine, given that, you know, you have at least Hungary and Poland, two examples of countries that have departed dramatically from the values of the European Union. Now, we could squeeze them financially, but they might reach a point of saying, well, sod it. What's the point of being members of the European Union? And you kind of drive them into the arms of Russia then.
Well, I mean, these are all the considerations. It's not easy. But I think if Europe doesn't follow its values, then it, you know, it loses its power, its reputation, its moral authority. But it is difficult. And the European Union doesn't want to be losing any more member states after Britain leaving either. They certainly don't want to be pushing people away. And I think, you know, persuasion, discussion, you know, there'll be elections in Poland. Maybe there'll be a change of government. You know, countries do go through phases of being more authoritarian and less authoritarian. And so to some degree, they'll, you know, that will be watched. So there's a variety of mechanisms. But to use the more extreme ones, I agree with you. It's a hard call for the European Union at times.
Yeah. Frances Fitzgerald, MEP, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.